Good afternoon and welcome to KALW's Open Air, our weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week could be treated to a live flamenco performance courtesy of Nina Menendez and company. Nina will be sharing details about the 9th annual Bay Area Flamenco Festival. Plus, 13th Floor Dance Theater Artistic Director Jenny McAllister talks about her company's world premiere of Awake at ODC Theater, based on the James Joyce novel Finnegan's Wake. And critic Peter Robinson will be in later to offer reviews of the films Last Days in Vietnam and Pride. Stay with us. Thirteenth Floor Dance Theater presents Awake, a new dance theater piece by Jenny McAllister, based on the epic work by James Joyce, Finnegan's Wake. It's a darkly comic look into the lives of the Finnegan family on the eve of the funeral of a much unloved aunt, and is being billed as a ghost story, a comedy of errors, and a deep exploration into the emotions surrounding a death in the family. Here to talk about it is Jenny McAllister, who is the artistic director of 13th Floor Dance Theater. She's been dancing and choreographing in the Bay Area for almost two decades. Before forming 13th Floor Dance Theater in 2010, she was co-director of Huckabay McAllister Dance from 1994 to 2009. She's also choreographed for San Jose Rep, SF Cabaret Opera, and various local musical theater groups, and taught modern dance at San Francisco Dance Center and the ODC School. Jenny, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Well, now this is an awfully epic work to base a dance on. So what was your first connection to James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, and have you read it?
I have read it. It took many months. My connection is that through the work that I do, I explore a lot of literary subjects. My last piece was Raymond Chandler. The piece before that, I explored Virginia Woolf and some of the Bloomsbury Group. I do a lot with language and movement and scripted theater. So this seemed to me sort of the ultimate language challenge was Finnegan's Wake, because the language itself is so absurd and abstract. There's a story buried in there somewhere. And I wanted to see what I could pull out of it.
Can you share some of that abstraction for those that aren't familiar with Finnegan's Wake?
I have a little bit here. Night by silent sailing night, Isabel, wildwood eyes and primrose hair, quietly, all the woods so wild in mauves of moss and daffodils, housed also still she lay neath the white thorn, child of tree, like some lost happy leaf. And so love poem that one of the brothers writes about his sister, there's sort of some incestuous elements to the story.
And some of that abstraction just in the language, I think, already just lends itself to movement.
It does. And we there's a scene in the book that's between two washerwomen yelling at each other across a river, and they're gossiping. It's really hard to tell what they're gossiping about unless you parse through the language. And so we have them moving as they're talking, and the movement helps convey what they're saying. So I thought I took that as a challenge. How can I take this language and then with movement make it more clear what's actually being said?
And it's not just being danced. There is some audio as well.
Yeah, it's basically a play with dance in it.
Okay.
And movement.
And how is your version of this differing from the epic full story of Finnegan's Wake?
Well, it's not nearly as long, for one thing. And I've only used the abstract language periodically and sparsely throughout. I've written a script that uses more modern language to make it a little more accessible, and then weaving the more abstract language in and out. I think if you had to listen to the abstract language for an hour and a half, it would lose everybody. So I'm trying to bring the story to life a little more through more modern language. We also set the play in the 1990s as opposed to in 1939, which is when the novel was written. So trying to make it a little more accessible.
And who is involved in the cast then?
I have 9 cast members. Do you want to hear all of their names?
Well, why not? Give them a little moment of glory.
Let's see. We've got Blaine Ashby, Kat Cole, Colin Epstein, Zach Fisher, Aaron Mailing Stewart. There's so many of them.
Sorry to put you on the spot. I know. Remember all 9.
And they're all going to hate me whoever I forget. Rebecca Siegel. There's 3 more. Yikes. I'll think of it as we come through. Yeah. Go to the list and
all
see.
Right, there you go. So are they all dancing as well as acting and
they
speaking?
They are. Yeah. It's difficult. I recently had an audition. I've worked with the same people for quite a while now, and I had to replace someone, and finding people who have the level and quality of acting that I need, and also the dance technique, is difficult. I was lucky to find Rebecca, who was my newest company member. But it's difficult to find people with both of those skills.
Mm-hmm. You shared a little bit of an excerpt from the Joyce. The book is described as having expansive linguistic experiments, some stream of consciousness writing, literary allusions, and free dream associations. So is that how is that reflected in the choreography?
I think that using dance and language is actually a really good parallel to the way that the book works, because for me, the book sort of moves in and out from the real to the fantastical. And I think that, you know, when you're walking down the street or talking to someone, they don't suddenly start moving. So having a conversation that slowly moves into gesture and into movement, you know, is this way of sort of integrating that fantastical element with the everyday. And that's what I'm aiming for with this piece.
Mm-hmm. And it is being billed as a darkly comic tale. So where does the comedy come in, or at least the more humorous aspect?
Finnegan's Wake is actually super funny if you read it carefully. There's tons of puns and jokes, and a lot of people think he wrote it actually as a giant joke. And a lot of my work, I tend to do a lot of humor. It's a little dark humor. If you come, you will definitely laugh. You might laugh like, ha, sometimes, like, you're not quite sure why you laughed at that. But there's a ghost. There's a family. We've set it at this family funeral. And so it's like it's an Irish-American family funeral. There's like brothers fighting on the lawn. There's people secretly kissing in the kitchen. There's these 2 really annoying relatives that are ex-models that can't shut up. So there's funny stuff. And then there's the dark aspect of there's a ghost. I used Tim Finnegan from the song as a ghost, the ghost of an older brother who is trying to bring back a memory of something that happened a long time ago. And so there's sort of the darkness woven in with the comedy.
It's hard to believe that this was written over the course of 17 years, this Finnegan's
Wake.
No,
if you read it, it's not hard to believe.
I don't want to say it's on my short list, but it's on my shelf, let's put it that way.
If you have a really serious injury and you're stuck in bed, you might want to,
consider that. And this is, you're basing this on the death of a much unloved aunt. Does that also work into the Joyce through line?
Yeah, I did some playing with words. There's a character called Aunt Olivia, and I expanded her. We have Aunt Olivia, Livia Anna, and another sister. So I've sort of split her into 3 characters, and one of them has passed away. And so in my piece, this funeral is just basically an excuse to get everybody together to deal with the larger issue of the funeral that happened before with the brother.
What exactly will we see on the stage?
As far as the set or as far as
the visual experience?
I think the visual experience will be really interesting. As soon as you walk into the theater, you will be immersed in the feeling of the set. The idea is that the home where the funeral takes place or the wake takes place is the father is a hoarder. And so there's a lot of stuff everywhere. He's a hoarder of all things past. And that starts from when you walk in on the walls and coming through into the theater. So it takes place in the kitchen and the yard of the house. The things from the kitchen are kind of spilling out into the yard, and the yard is growing into the kitchen. So I think it will be a really interesting experience to walk into, mm-hmm. as if you're walking into the
and
house.
And what are we going to be hearing?
You'll be hearing the text, of course. And then we have music, because the play takes place in the 90s and then sort of flashbacks to the 80s when the brother was killed. We're using some 90s and 80s music, the Proclaimers, Billy Idol, sort of, and then some other sort of more atmospheric music that's more like film score sounding that goes behind. So a contrast between sort of this pop music and then this sort of eerie background music.
Neat. And that sounds like you're combining all kinds of elements there.
That's yeah, wonderful. I don't do things simple.
Well, now your last name suggests perhaps roots in the same geographical area as James Joyce.
Yeah, definitely
Joyce.
Some Irish and Scottish. Yeah, exploring my roots a little bit.
And what's coming next on for the ensemble, the 13th Floor Dance after this?
After this show? Well, I might change tack a little bit. The last three things I've done have been, as I said, exploring these literary areas. So I think next year I may try something new. I may be choreographing for an opera, and I may also do a collaboration with another choreographer. So
perhaps based on a shorter novel, too.
Exactly, yes. I might take it a little easier after this.
Well, we're going to go out with some of the music of the Rovers and the performance of Tim Finnegan's Wake. But I will remind you that this is happening next weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 16th through the 19th at ODC Theater. ODC Theater is at 3153 17th Street in San Francisco. You can learn more about the performance at odcdance.org and keep up with all things Jenny McAllister, the executive director of 13th Floor Dance, at their website, 13thfloordance.org. Jenny, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me.
A pleasure.
Tim Finnegan lived in Walken Street, a gentle Irishman, mighty hearted, a beautiful brogue, so rich and sweet. Rise in the world, he carried a heart. You see, the sort of a tippling way, with a love for the liquor, poor Tim was born. To help him on with his work each day, he'd drop of the crater every morning.
And whip on the dye, now dance to your partner, well, the floor, your colours shake. Well, the truth, I tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
One morning, Tim got rather full, his head felt heavy, which made him shake. Fell from a ladder and he broke his skull, and they carried him home, his corpse to wake. Roll him up in a nicely sheet and laid him out upon the bed. A gallon of whiskey at his feet and a bottle of porter at his head.
And wipe on the dye, now dance to your partner, while the floor your colours shake. Wasn't it the truth, they tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
His friends assembled at the wake, and Mrs. Finnegan called for lunch. First she brought in tea and cake, then pipes, tobacco and whiskey punch. Biddy O'Brien began to cry, such a nice clean corpse did you ever see? Tim of all, you know, how you did it. You're a hole, you're gops and Paddy Mickey.
Ow!
Wake on the dye, now dance to your partner, well, the floor, your colours shake.
Well, the truth, they tell you, lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
Then Maggie O'Connor took up the job of Biddy. She see you're wrong, I'm sure. Biddy gave her a belt in the gob and left her sprawling on the floor. Then the war did soon engage, woman to woman and man to man. Jalele Law was all the rage, and a row and eruption soon began.
Hey!
Wake on the dye, now dance to your partner, well, the floor, your colours shake.
They tell you lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
Then McGee Maloney raised his head when a noggin of whiskey flew at him. It missed and fallen on the bed, the liquor scattered over Tim.
Tim revived, see how he rises. Timothy rising from the bed.
Ted, whittle your whiskey around like blazes. Tanamundale, do you think I'm dead?
Oh. Wake on the dye, now dance to your partner, well, the floor, your colours shake.
Well, the truth, they tell you lots of fun at Finnegan's Wake.
The Rovers performing Tim Finnegan's Wake. Again, information about Jenny McAllister's interpretation of dance and play at the 13th Floor Dance Theater at ODC Theater. 13th Floor Dance Theater presents Awake, a new dance theater piece by Jenny McAllister at 13thfloordance.org and at odcdance.org. Good afternoon. I'm David LaTulipe. Later, Peter Robinson will be in with a couple of movie reviews. And now, keeping on that musical theme, a little bit of flamenco for you.
Ay, que la camita a mí no me consiente y que yo me levante tan temprano. Ay, sería. La luca que mi cuerpo silbito. A mí no me venga y tan a buscar, y en vez de quitarme tú a mí la penita, tú me la vienes.
Bit of the artistry of Jose Mendez, the opening, well, he'll be a part of the entire Bay Area Flamenco Festival from October 9th through the 12th here in San Francisco. That was a recorded version of Jose, who couldn't be with us in studio, but we do have a couple of live performers you're about to hear. First of all, the 9th Annual Bay Area Flamenco Festival gets underway tonight through the 12th, with workshops in between there and extending until the 16th, various locations around the Bay Area. Information at bayareaflamencofestival.org. Here to talk about the festival is one of the premier people involved in Bay Area Flamenco for so many years, Nina Menendez. She's Bay Area Flamenco. First of all, the organization is a grassroots arts organization dedicated to facilitating cultural exchange opportunities with world-class visiting artists from Spain through performances, workshops, and residency. Festival founder and artistic director Nina Menendez has a lifelong passion for flamenco. She has a PhD in Hispanic cultures from Stanford and comes from a family of musicians. Her paternal grandparents were from Spain, where she cultivated a deep tie to the flamenco community. As founder and artistic director of the Bay Area Flamenco Partnership, she organizes concerts, workshops, and cultural exchange opportunities featuring artists from Spain and elsewhere. She's an avid aficionada of the cante. She also enjoys singing herself. Nina, welcome to KALW in Open Air.
Thank you, David. Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, she's joined in studio fresh off the plane from Spain by Marie Peña. She's an heir to one of Spain's most important families of gypsy cante, Los Pinini. Antonio Moyo is also here. He's one of Spain's most important guitar accompanists, following a tradition of his maestro Pedro Bacan, known for his work with such luminaries of gypsy cante as Pepa da Benito, Ines Bacan, Tomás de Parate, and the late Bernarda de Utrera. Also here, also from Spain, just right from the airport, Carmen Ledesma, whose performance will celebrate Sevilla's legacy of female dancers from Pastora Imperio and Matilde Corral to the grassroots Pueblo-style dancers of Morón. Welcome to everyone here. It's wonderful to have everyone.
Thank you, thank you. It's such a pleasure to have these great artists direct from Spain here for the Bay Area Flamenco Festival.
Indeed.
We're very, very excited. It's an honor. Carmen Ledesma is one of Spain's great dance artists from the province of Sevilla, and it's her first time in the Bay Area, first time in California. And there's a great expectation. Everyone's so excited. Tomorrow night she's going to be performing at the Cal Theater Fort Mason, and it's a tremendous honor to have her here with us in California for the first time. She's an incredible dancer. She really brings together this tradition of female bailaoras from the area of Seville, combining the more theatrical styles of the great dancers as you mentioned, Pastor Imperio and Matilde Corral.
I hope I did okay with the pueblo style dancers.
That's right. I mean, she was a student of Pepe Rios, also of Enrique El Cojo, and she has like the Lebrija, Utrera, Morón pueblo style, but she also has, you know, the more theatrical. She worked with Mario Maya. She worked with, you know, a lot of the greats. So,
well, let's back up a little bit to talk about those different styles and where they developed. Perhaps you'd like to share a little bit.
Un poquito de los diferentes estilos de baile que hay en Sevilla que tú representas.
Claro. Hombre, yo he estado, los principios míos han sido de Morón con Pepe Río, y después he tenido la escuela sevillana con Matilde, con la escuela de Pastora Imperio, pero yo me he ido a través de los años haciendo en las casas gitanas de Utrera, Lebrija, Jerez, ¿no? Toda esa zona de Andalucía, que yo ha sido lo que me he hecho con Pedro Bacán, cuando yo ya he cogido mi línea flamenca muy personalizada en un sector del flamenco que tiene unos cambios muy fuertes a, si tú lo comparas, por ejemplo, con la escuela sevillana y eso, ¿no?
She says that she's really, she's based out of the more urban style of Seville, but as she's matured as an artist, she's really gone back to the roots of the flamenco from the small towns, and that it's passed down through the generations in the gypsy families of Utrera, Lebrija, Morón, and she's taken that on as the main focus of her dance. It's really quite different than the more theatrical styles, the more urban styles that she was trained in. But then again, her first teacher was a more grassroots style dancer, Pepe Rios. So she really is going back to her origins, and today has come to represent this very grassroots community style of flamenco dance that's you might find at a gypsy wedding and a baptism and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So is it really, it's obviously a part of the fabric of Spain. Is it a folk fabric that just became more mainstream, or is it a revival of some older styles that are now more prominent?
¿Qué opinas, o qué opinan? A lo mejor alguno tiene una respuesta diferente. Que si esto del flamenco, digamos, de pueblo, ¿es simplemente una variante de lo que es el arte de flamenco, o es algo que se ha ido a buscar a las raíces, o se ha mantenido siempre así, desde siempre? ¿Ha habido cambios?
Hombre, yo tengo una parte de lo que es el flamenco, porque en Andalucía, lo que es las casas tradicionales, yo no sé, Antonio tendrá también otra versión también, que es todo muy de familia, y hay unos cantes y hay unos toques que son muy personales dependiendo de qué zona. Pero, por ejemplo, yo, que he nacido en Sevilla, cuando yo empezaba, el clásico español era la base del baile en Andalucía, que era por eso que nosotros tenemos la escuela sevillana, que es un poco la mezcla entre el clásico y el flamenco. Uh-huh. Pero la suerte mía ha sido de que yo he convivido con otras gentes, ¿no? Con otras músicas. Y es lo que yo he aportado a mi carrera artística, ¿no? Pero claro que sí, que en las casas flamencas hay unos estilos y unas músicas que no son realmente lo de la escuela sevillana, ¿no?
She says, well, really, for her, she's been lucky to be really steeped in these traditions that are passed down through the families, and that are very specific to each family and to each region within flamenco, so that the styles are really particular to that town. It's almost like with wine, you know, how they talk about the terroir, right? Each wine is very, very different. If it happens to be just a few meters down the road, then it changes completely. Well, she's saying that's very much similar to flamenco dance, especially the grassroots flamenco that really is at the heart of authentic and genuine flamenco that she does. Mm-hmm. Whereas this what they call the Seville style of more theatrical flamenco dance, which she was also trained in, is kind of a mixture between Spanish classical dance and flamenco styles that are sort of derived from the families, the various threads of family heritage that, mm-hmm. that of the, within the dance traditions.
Well, maybe we can hear a couple of contrasting styles now. Hear some live music, and then we'll talk more about the festival and their artistry.
Venga, a ver si podemos escuchar un poquito de guitarra o, o de cante, como quieran. Antonio Moya is going to play some guitar in his own particular style.
Beautiful playing by Antonio Moya. My gosh. He's part of the Bay Area Flamenco Festival happening from the 9th through the 12th here in San Francisco and other Bay Area venues, as well as involved with some of the workshops. Antonio, you have to talk to me a little bit about that amazing instrument. It looks like it has been through a lot.
¿Quieres saber algo de la guitarra misma? Lo que no se imagina, ¿no?
La guitarra, dice mucho en la orquesta sinfónica de los pobres.
You call it the symphonic orchestra of the poor. In Spain, they call it that. Especially the gypsies, they talk about it that way because they can get so much music out of it.
And where did you get the instrument?
¿Dónde la conseguí?
Pues esta es prestada.
Actually, he borrowed this particular guitar here in California.
De mi amigo Kenny.
Kenny Parker, el Kenny el Lebrijano, a wonderful guitar player who was also a student of Antonio Moya's great maestro, Pedro Bacán. And this is a very special guitar that he loaned Antonio for the performance.
Yes. So the music we just heard had a very strong improvisatory element to it.
Se dado cuenta que hay mucha improvisación en lo que has tocado.
Sí.
But are the melodies themselves that you're basing it on based on folk melodies or?
No. ¿Has cogido la melodía, digamos, del folclore o son sacadas de tu corazón, de tu cabeza, de tu
composición mía.
They're his own compositions.
Lovely, lovely.
Yeah, the rhythms and the structures are traditional, and then but the actual melodic forms are his own composition.
Mm-hmm. And what can we hear? Let's hear some vocal music of a different style, perhaps.
Yes, that would be wonderful. I wanted to talk a little bit about how the festival is going to work in that way. Tonight at La Peña Cultural Center in Berkeley, we're focusing on the singing and the guitar playing. And then tomorrow and Saturday, we're focusing on the dance. So tomorrow night at the Cowell Theater, Fort Mason, Carmen Ledesma is the featured artist. And Saturday night at the Cowell Theater, Fort Mason, the featured artist will be Rafael de Carmen, who's also an incredible dancer from Sevilla. And then the program with the singing and guitar focus is repeated again on Sunday down in Santa Cruz at the Cumbua Jazz Center. So it's going to be a great, all different varieties of the flamenco arts will be presented during the festival, and it's very exciting because, you know, the audience gets involved in shouting out ole and getting interested in, or actually participating in that way in the performance. From their seats, of course, but sure. it's a wonderfully interactive environment, and people will have a great experience when they attend the festival. It's a great chance to also get to meet the artists. Usually, after the show, people come out into the lobby, and it's a lot of fun.
Hmm. Information at BayAreaFlamencoFestival.org, a website you'll be hearing throughout the rest of this hour. Nina, could you have us? Let's hear something from Maria, if we can.
María, él te quería preguntar que si de dónde es tu cante y qué vas a cantar ahora.
Bueno, voy a cantar un poquito por bulería, ¿no?
She's going to sing a little of the style called bulerías.
Mi cante viene desde Utrera.
She comes from this small town called Utrera, outside of Seville.
Sí, nacida de cante de familia. Digamos.
It's a family style of singing that's passed down through the generations. Within the Gypsy clan, she comes from Los de la Buena, sí. And Los Pinini, and the Utrera
sí.
Singers. Which, ¿cuáles cantadores, digamos, son tú heredes tu cante de ellos?
Referencia.
Bueno, Fernanda, Bernarda, Perrate.
The legendary singers, La Fernanda, La Bernarda, from Utrera.
Gaspar de Utrera.
Also Gaspar de Utrera, and of course, Perrate.
Incluso Bambino.
And even Bambino, who is a more pop flamenco artist, Pepa. But also gypsy from the Pepa zone. And Pepa de Utrera.
Pepa de Benito.
De Benito.
Pepa de Utrera.
Also.
Feonga.
Let's hear some music. This is Marie Peña with Antonio
gitana soy y tú me dices que me vaya por darte el gusto me voy.
Ale.
Me dice que me vaya por darte el gusto me voy. Cambiar y no quiso.
Vamos ya ahí, alza.
Bravo, bravo, Mari Peña, Antonio Moya, and fellow clappers, part of the Bay Area Flamenco Festival.
That's right. The palmas are a very important part of the rhythm, and all even the things that are yelled out, and the jaleo, as we call it, is part of it, too. So Mari Peña is a great jewel and wonderful singer, and Antonio Moya as well. So we're very, very pleased to have them.
If I could sing half as well as I, when I came off the plane from Spain, I'd be very happy.
Que si acababa de bajarse del avión pudiera cantar así, sería muy feliz.
Con gel light.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the workshops that are going on. I mean,
yes.
How big is the Bay Area flamenco interest in the community?
Oh, it's a wonderful community of, artists in training here in the Bay Area. Lots of students that are taking classes with many of the teachers around the area that are here living permanently, such as La Tania, Yalisa, Carola Sertuche of Theater Flamenco, many others, up-and-coming teachers like Melissa Cruz, Fanny Ara, and Querencia de Mas, and there's quite a few that teach here in the region, and so they've developed a big following of flamenco dance students. Fewer that are interested in the singing because it's harder for U.S.-based folks to learn the singing, but there is a small nucleus of folks that are singing now and learning the cante. Of course, there are several accomplished professional singers here in the Bay Area that live here as well, such as Roberto Zamora, José Cortés, who's a gitano from Spain as well, and the south of France, and several others. But when visiting artists come for the festival and are able to share their what they know, their knowledge, and their great artistry with the local students, it's very exciting for folks. A lot of the students who show up are just beginning, and others are more accomplished, and the teachers are able to accommodate all levels. We're really excited to have this weekend, on Saturday, the dance classes at on Saturday, they're going to be held in Berkeley at the Ashkenaz Dance Center from 11 to 2, and in San Francisco on Sunday from 11 to 2 at the Lines Dance Ballet Academy.
And information about those also at the Bay Area Flamenco Festival website.
That's right, .org. And those classes will be taught the first hour and a half by Carmen Ledesma and the second hour and a half by Rafael de Carmen, the other guest dancer for the festival. And then also on Saturday in Oakland at a private home, which the address is provided when you register, located near Kaiser Hospital in Oakland, there will be guitar classes by Antonio Moya and singing classes by the two singers that have come for the festival as well.
Mm-hmm. Tell me, maybe for the panel of artists here, is there such a thing as American flamenco or New World flamenco, or is it a matter of just curating and discovering the older things that have been written? Is anything new being
written? ¿Ha surgido un flamenco nuevo, digamos, en el extranjero, o solamente es aprender de la tradición y desarrollarlo como buenamente puedan los extranjeros?
El extranjero es el que guarda la verdad del flamenco. Yo soy profesora, llevo mucho tiempo dando clases, y mis alumnos son todos de fuera, y la verdad que ellos quieren la tradición y las raíces. Lo que pasa es que ha evolucionado mucho el flamenco y ven cosas nuevas y también le gustan, pero la gente de fuera son las que mantienen el verdadero flamenco.
She feels that really it's the foreign flamenco aficionados that have helped to keep the tradition alive. Of course, within the gypsy families, they pass it down through the generations as part of their heritage and everyday life. But the foreign students that come to study flamenco in Spain and learn and bring it back to their here to the U.S. or to Japan, or they are the ones who really are helping to keep flamenco alive from outside of the community, because the mainstream Spanish community doesn't respect the tradition as much as the foreign students do, and the foreign aficionados, and they're really helping to keep it alive. In fact, Carmen Ledesma says that most of her students now are either from Japan or other parts of Europe or the United States, and they come to her looking for the really traditional flamenco. Of course, they're also exposed to the modern flamenco that's been emerging, that's kind of more of a mix with modern dance and so forth. And some of them like that too, but the ones that gravitate toward her and others like her are those who really are helping to keep the traditions alive and garner respect internationally for grassroots traditional flamenco.
Yo pienso que lo pienso como Carmen, que el flamenco como música viva que es, necesita de ir evolucionando, pero siempre dentro de un orden. No evolucionar por evolucionar buscando, ¿no? Tiene que ser una forma natural y espontánea. Y muchas veces, pues, el público extranjero es un poquito el que mantiene un poquito esto firme, porque muchas veces hay mucha gente que se le va un poquito el tema de tanto evolucionar y pierden la esencia, la raíz. Se puede evolucionar hacia armonías nuevas en la guitarra, pero que suene flamenco, ¿me entiendes? Y muchas veces, pues, se da el caso que el público extranjero es el que parece decir, pues, aquí en esta trampa no caigo. Vale, hasta aquí llego, aguanto esa evolución, pero dentro de unas normas, dentro de que suene flamenco, bien sea en el baile, en el toque como la guitarra.
He says in guitar, just like in dance and flamenco singing, really the foreign aficionados have been very important in terms of serving almost as a filter and saying, hey, you know, experimentation is great, and we understand, of course, as do the flamenco artists themselves, that flamenco needs to evolve. It's now of the 21st century, and of course there's going to be new harmonies in the guitar playing and different changes in the dancing that reflects the new way of life of modern times.
Sure.
But in some ways, the foreign audiences have served as a filter to say, well, okay, but, you know, only up to a certain point, it has to still be based on the traditions of flamenco. It can't just come out of left field and be something completely alien to flamenco that's just added on. And they really demand that the essence of flamenco be maintained. And he's noticed that it's really been important to have the opportunity to play around the world, because you get that feedback and that support from the international students, but also the international producers, to keep, you know, that keep flamenco on track and keep it linked to the roots of flamenco.
Wonderful. Well, we have time for one more piece of music. I'm wondering what you'd like to share with us. Tell us what we might hear first.
So Mari's going to sing another style of the Ugrera Bulerías.
Nadie se lleva nada, todo se queda en esta vida. Tanta ambición, ¿para qué? Si nadie, 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 nadie se lleva nada. Tanto luchar en vano, si este mundo es un mar de pena. Tanta ambición, ¿para qué?
Vale, qué lindo.
Si nadie, 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 nadie se lleva nada. Vida.
gran pena de amor. Nadie, nadie, nadie.
Thank you.
Indeed. That was Mari Peña with Antonia Moya, Carmen Ledesma, and Nina Menendez contributing on the hand clap end of things. Thank you so much. There's so much emotion going on in that music, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. It's a wonderfully passionate music that reflects the hard life that the gypsy people of Andalusia lived over the centuries, and really is encapsulated in the feelings that are transmitted through the singing today. Anywhere, the whole range of emotions from humor to anguish are expressed through the singing and the guitar playing and the dancing, of course, which is incredibly expressive. And one of the main things for these artists is the ability to express feeling, real genuine feeling, not acting, not playing out a role, but really actually expressing themselves from the heart.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is festival number 9. I imagine you've got great plans ahead for the big 1-0 coming up.
That's right. Yeah, we're really excited about next year, and we're going to have a large festival. It looks like it's going to be taking place in March, so we have great surprises for everyone. So keep tuned.
Indeed. Nina, we'll have you back on. Nina Menendez, the brains behind the Bay Area Flamenco Festival. Information at BayAreaFlamencoFestival.org. Thank you all so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll see everyone at the Cowell Theater, Fort Mason, this Friday and Saturday.
Indeed.
Everybody's happy to be here.
Thank you.
Well, come on, all you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam. Way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. I'm man, this is war, a go-go. There's plenty of good money to be made. Supply the army, rules of the trade. Just don't be afraid if they drop the bomb. We're driving on a Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well,
bit of different guitar music to introduce our segment with Peter Robinson. Peter Robinson, this has to do with the last days of Vietnam, I believe.
That's it. And that, of course, is Country Joe Fish. And I think the philosophy behind that song really has its ending in this great documentary made by Rory Kennedy called The Last Days in Vietnam. And it covers the fall of Saigon. It's looking at the year 1975, but it's looking specifically at those 7 days and a little earlier that led to the final liftoff from the American embassy in Saigon. It's a very, very well-told documentary, and considering what a divisive issue the war had been, and particularly by 1975, this kind of rueful, retrospective look manages to dispose of the rage and tell it very much in many cases from an eyewitness's point of view. Rory Kennedy, of course, her uncle was President John Kennedy, her father Robert Kennedy, an interesting contrast there since President Kennedy increased the involvement in Vietnam, and of course Robert Kennedy was one of the leading lights and a passionate critic of the war. So this is an open-minded film filled with lively curiosity, and I learned several things, even though I've read about and covered that era well. And perhaps that classic shot showing people climbing up a ladder onto a rooftop, which many people said was the embassy in Saigon. In fact, it was the CIA headquarters downtown. So as the helicopters were coming in, that was one of the last places where people lifted off. at the heart of the movie is the real-life ambassador, Graham Martin, who died in 1990. And that he is certainly one of the most controversial figures in this documentary. Either he was naive and didn't believe that after the Paris peace talks, Saigon was going to fall, or else he was following the official line that no South Vietnamese were going to be lifted out. There are a couple of live interviews. Henry Kissinger, who was, of course, the State Department spokesperson at the time, and an interesting character who played an active role, a Navy officer at the time, is Richard Armitage. He, again, would come to life in the later Bush administrations. And there was a lot of loyalty and, I think, a genuine courage from the Special Ops Group, who went out of their way to ensure intelligence officers and officers from the South Vietnamese forces who they had been closely working with were gotten out. And so as the movie ends and the fall of Saigon is now imminent and all the questions, I think what we learn from this we learned partly from some of the very original footage, actually shot from some of the boats lying off the shores of Saigon, here is the end. Here is an end to a particular moment in American history. And perhaps the only thing I would add is that since we are now in a state of normalization with Vietnam, maybe we could have heard more from the other side. It's a highly recommended documentary. It's playing at cinemas both in San Francisco and around the Bay Area. It's called Last Days in Vietnam, and it's directed by Rory Kennedy.
I guess we'll have to wait another 40 years before we see Last Days in Iraq or Iran come out. We'll
or Afghanistan.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah. It's currently at the Opera Plaza Cinemas, Last Days in Vietnam.
Now, my second movie for the week, I think, is equally important for totally different reasons. Again, it's a piece of, in this case, docudrama. It's set in England in 1983. That, of course, is the era of Thatcher's attack on the miners. The movie is called Pride, and it's an interesting little piece of history that I don't think a lot of people was living in London at that time, really knew much about. And it is how the gay movement came out to support the miners' strike. It's a very unlikely type of alliance. And I think what this film does is really capture the period of the time. Stephen Beresford is the director turned playwright. And Bill Nighy plays quite a significant part as one of the older kind of spokespersons with the miners' union. Imelda Staunton, George MacKay also star. And I think from a historian's point of view, it's a good example of a movement which in England, the gay movement, did not have much credence in the early 90s and early 80s. But in fact, when they come out to support the miners, they begin to build an alliance. And sadly, or maybe rightly, one way or the other, depending on your political viewpoint, the miners' strike is a failure. Margaret Thatcher closes the mines. But out of this comes the first gay pride parade. And, of course, the miners then go on to support the gay movement. So I think it's a particularly interesting example where by trying to help somebody, you actually end up helping yourself. It's well made. I spoke to Bill Nighy after the UK press screening, and he told me a couple of things which I thought were interesting. First of all, he loved the singing. Wales is a great country for community singing. It often begins in the chapel. And some of the more moving moments in this film, which incidentally is a very funny film, some very humorous touches to it, is that. And secondly, that he himself, you know, had to read the script carefully because he did not know about this alliance between the gay and lesbian movement in England in the early 1980s and the miners' strike. So, again, two different pieces of social history, each very significant, different reasons. Pride running around the city and many cinemas also in Marin. And what I mentioned earlier, the last days in Vietnam.
I should mention that Pride is at the Embarcadero here in San Francisco. And I understand you got a brief update on some things happening on the London stage.
Indeed, we have. And I've been back there for most of the month of September and early October. And I'm thinking about it because this was the warmest October and November and September since 1910. So I did a lot of walking around. London is a great city for walks. It's parkland. But, of course, I was interested in the theatre. And a couple of tips, if you are planning a autumn or fall visit, pick up a copy of Time Out. You can get it in most of the big bookstores. Waterstones would be a good example. And that gives you a very rapid breakdown on most of the cultural movements, the art galleries, the music and the theatres. Now, there are over 200 theatres, major theatres, in the Greater London area. And I think one of the major changes that I've witnessed is the musical. It is really now beginning to rival Broadway in terms of what you go to see, a serious play or a musical. And one classic example is the National Theatre. They've actually converted it to a disco for a show called Imelda. Imelda is the lady with the shoes. She was the wife of Marcos from the Philippines. And the minute you go in, the whole place is throbbing and jumping. The other great, in this case, Latino lady, Evita, is playing. Of course, there's the Lion's King, the Scarborough Boys, and on it goes. If you're looking for serious theatre, three good recommendations. First, for people who followed Hilary Mantel, the famous Thomas Cromwell, one of the four Thomases whom Henry VIII executed, Thomas Wolsey, Thomas Cranmer, Thomas More. Well, this one is about Thomas Cromwell, has now been turned into a play, two plays, in fact. One is called Wolf Hall, the other is called Bring Up the Bodies. Very difficult to get tickets. If you're looking for tickets, don't forget to go down to Leicester Square early in the morning, 10 o'clock. You can probably buy half-price tickets. Then there's one called Charles III, which will give you a laugh. It's a spoof about what happens to our good Prince Charles. And then there are the James plays, covering the three Jameses, James I, James II, and James III. So there are indeed lots of different parameters playing at the London scene. And I finally finished with the early episode, no spoilers here, of the new series of Downton Abbey. And nothing's changed in Downton Abbey. We are back there in that great late Edwardian period. And I'm often reminded of a line from a Gilbert and Sullivan opera when the person turns to a member of the House of Lords and he says, "Tell me, sir, what do you do?" He says, "Nothing in particular, but I do it particularly well." I think that, again, speaks for Masterpiece Theatre. It speaks for Downton Abbey. Anyone planning a fall in London, you may not need an umbrella. The sun is shining.
Thank you very much, Peter. We do enjoy your updates. And again, check out Time Out London if you're heading to London. I'm David LaTulipe. That's Open Air for today, for this week. I do want to mention that San Francisco's own Garrick Ohlsson is in concert with the San Francisco Symphony performing Rock 3, one of the most challenging concertos in the repertoire, made famous through the 1996 film about David Helfgott's struggle with that epic work called Shine, which starred Jeffrey Rush. Information about those concerts, which also includes 2005 Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Stephen Stuckey, whose work The Stars and the Roses received its premiere last February with the Berklee Symphony. His work Jeu de Timbre is being performed, along with Bartok's Miraculous Mandarin. Information at sfsymphony.org. Thanks to Neil Swinkles for helping produce Open Air. You can send me show suggestions, David at kalw.org.